Okay, welcome back. We have 2 hours of an exclusive for you now. This is going to be the first time this story has ever been told on radio anywhere, and we're doing it with great honor and appreciation to the two men who will be joining us in just a moment. First of all, my hat's off to journalist Ben Moffitt of the Mountain Mail, the newspaper in Socorro, New Mexico, who put a two-part story together on this issue. Actually went to school with these two gentlemen, or one of them, as a young man. The two parts are up in Guests at Rents.com. You can see them there. New Mexico UFO Crash Encounter, 1945, Parts 1 and Part 2. So, Ben, thank you very much, if you're listening, for this excellent reporting and fine journalism. Without you and the cooperation of our two guests, we wouldn't have this very important new case to consider and to put in our database. Let me read just a little bit from Ben Moffitt's story to kind of set the stage here, then we'll bring our two guests on. Just before dawn on July 16, 1945, scientists detonated the world's first atomic bomb at Trinity Site, some 20 miles southeast of San Antonio, New Mexico. 3 weeks later, on August 6th and 9th, the United States brought World War II to a dramatic end by using the bomb to destroy the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, of course. On August the 6th, the world first learned that the Trinity event, which had frightened San Antonians witless, was not an ammunition magazine containing high explosives and pyrotechnics, as the military had reported it. It was an atomic bomb. Death, the destroyer of worlds, in the words of project physicist J. Robert Oppenheimer, or Oppenheimer. Yes, indeed, those words still ring today. Death, the destroyer of worlds. Amazing. It was in this crucible of suspicion and disinterest, bred by familiarity, that a small contingent of U.S. Army passed almost unnoticed through the San Antonio town in mid to late August 1945 on a secret assignment. Little or nothing has been printed about the mission, shrouded in the hush-hush atmosphere of the time. But the military detail apparently came from White Sands Proving Grounds to the east, where the bomb was exploded. It was a recovery operation destined for the Mesquite and Greasewood Desert west of old U.S. Highway 85 at what is now milepost 139, the San Antonio exit of Interstate 25. Over the course of several days, soldiers in army fatigues loaded the shattered remains of a flying apparatus onto a huge flatbed truck and hauled it away. That such an operation took place between about August 20th and August 25th, 1945, there is no doubt, insist two former San Antonians, Remigio Baca and Jose Padilla, eyewitnesses to the event. Padilla, then 9, and Baca, 7, secretly watched much of the soldiers' recovery work from a nearby ridge. Their keen interest stemmed from being the first to reach the crash site. And now, for the first time in the world, we're very honored to have both Remy and Jose with us. Remy, are you there?
I'm here.
Thank you, my friend, for being here.
Glad to be here.
And Jose, how about you?
Same thing.
Okay, gentlemen. I don't know who wants to start here. Jose, you were 9 at the time. Pretty young fella.
Yes, sir.
You guys were in different grades, I guess, at school in San Antonio. 9 years old would have been what, about third grade, something like that?
Fourth grade.
Fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And Remy?
I was in, I think it was probably around the first grade.
Okay. How did you guys know each other?
Well, we went to school together.
Yeah.
In addition to that, years before, my dad and his dad were involved in the local politics.
Uh-huh.
As such.
How big a town was San Antonio back then?
San Antonio, I'm glad you asked that.
All right.
Now, San Antonio, in comparison with today, would be very primitive. You know, we lived in a small town, probably, when we were young, just imagine that my graduating class was like 8 people.
Eight. Yes.
All right. So it was composed of farming and cattle, as such. And at that time, in San Antonio, we had no electricity, no running water,
wow.
Plumbing.
Wow.
We had we heated with wood,
mm-hmm.
and in the cold winters, but then we'd pick up coal alongside the railroad tracks to use that for heat.
You guys would go out and pick up coal that fell off the
right.
coal cars.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And in addition to that, the only telephone system that existed was these. We had these little condensed milk cans. And we took the top off of them, poked a little hole in the bottom.
Come on.
And put in a piece of twine. and that's what we talked with.
Yeah, they work, folks, believe
you know,
it or not.
Then, you know, and our cell phone at the time was a square little box of sardines. We put that in our pocket, the shirt pocket.
Gotcha.
Overalls, you know, the whole bit.
Fortunately for you guys, those ideas were first introduced, and look what science finally did with them.
Absolutely.
We've made it now.
Yep.
Thank you for that. You deserve some recognition for that. Okay. Little town. Everybody knew everybody, obviously. And good town. Must have been, I guess, everybody had to have a bond to be in a small town like that.
Oh, absolutely. And that was, our bond with Moffitt. We went to the same school. We played on the same team.
Journalist Ben Moffitt, right.
That's right, yeah.
Now, how did he come to, Jose, who got contacted by Ben? How did he look you guys up? What triggered this story?
First of all, Remy and I got separated back in the 50s when he went to live over in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And I came over to California.
Right.
And my son is in the genealogy business. He happened to run into his Remy's brother, youngest brother, I guess, in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And they started talking, having a conversation, and he asked my son his last name, you know. And then he said that he knew someone that was named Jose. That's how my son was in touch with Remy by the computer, you know,
mm-hmm.
internet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we became back together again.
And incidentally, before Jose left San Antonio, essentially, we had, you know, he had plans, and he was the older of the two, and so he left in, I think it was 51, 52, around there, and so his plan, he was going to California, he would be going to work there, and so he says, look, you know, I'll come and pick you up
mm-hmm.
as soon as I find a job, and then you can come and finish school over there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great, so I was looking forward to that.
Yeah.
In between that time, my brother had completed his tour of duty in the Air Force, and he was at McCord Field here in Tacoma, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got out here, went to work here, got married. Been married about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had written me a letter. We had communicated by mail, and he wrote me a letter and says, hey, he says, how would you like to come and visit? And I said, yeah, that would be great. Okay, this is my, our brother is going to be going by there. He's on vacation, and he'll pick you up in June, I think it was. So I hitched a ride with him. But before Jose left, my dad had asked about fixing the windmill. The cylinder underground was leaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially I took it apart and went down to my uncle's to see what could be done with it. And he says, I don't know. I says, it's too far gone. So then on the way home, Jose would just pull in the driveway because we had plans to go visit some friends. And so I told him what the problem was. Well, let's take it down to Socorro and see if we can get it welded. So we went to Socorro. He drove me up there and to Socorro, and we talked to the guy. He was a blacksmith. And he says, no, we can't do anything with it. It's made out of brass. So we went back into the well. So, well, let's put it back together. So we went back under the well, and started putting it back together. And then, you know, in an act of desperation, because my dad, he would come home like once a month. He worked over in Albuquerque, worked for the Veterans Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That's when all the, you know, the disabled people, disabled veterans were getting out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, big. I mean, it was, he worked a lot. So anyway, I just wanted to, you know, please him, right?
Of course.
Fix the cylinder. So in an act of desperation, I asked Jose to reach back. We're in this wall, and it's got this salt cedar casing beams that go across it to keep it from falling in. And so I asked him to reach back there, and he did, and he pulled out a can of Prince Albert. In that can of Prince Albert, I had some Indian head coins, which I still have today, that I had been saving. You know, they were treasure.
Yeah.
And there was that piece of aluminum type foil that I had picked up years before at the crash site.
That strange piece of metal. All right, stand by.
All right.
Gentlemen, we'll pause and come right back. So that's how the connection was made. We'll come back and begin to build the story of how these two young fellows, aged 9 and 7, were first on the scene of another. This is an unknown crash until now, with bodies near San Antonio, New Mexico, 1945. Be right back. Okay, right back with you. My guests are Jose and Remy, and we're talking about 1945, July. Remember, July 6th, let's keep these dates in line. July 16th, 1945, the United States detonated the first atomic bomb on the planet at Trinity Site, some 20 miles southeast of San Antonio, New Mexico, where these two young men lived. That's July 16th. Now, about a month later, 4 to 5 weeks, the U.S. Army sent a recovery team right through San Antonio on a secret assignment. Now, so you're under this windmill. You've got a little tin of coin that's your treasure, and a little piece of strange, crinkly kind of, or I don't know, was it crinkly or was it straight?
It was straight, and if you crinkled it, it would straighten up.
Okay. Now, was this in the can, the Prince Albert can also?
Right. I had kept it in there for quite a number of years.
Okay. How old were you guys at this time when you were messing with that windmill?
We're looking at probably 14.
14, 15. Okay. All right. All right. So let's stop right there and start rewinding. Let's go back now.
Okay.
Let's go back. Okay. Jose, you're 9. Remy, you're 7. Third grade and maybe first grade. What happened? Remy, go first.
Well,
you're younger. You don't remember quite as much, but something like that, I'm sure you'll never forget, no matter how old you are.
It never leaves you.
Yeah.
As such, it really doesn't. But in any event, Jose's dad had asked him to find a cow that was ready to calf, and so he asked me if I'd go with him, and I usually, you know, did. We usually did a lot of things together. As such, my background was from a farm. My dad was a sharecropper. So,
yeah, even though
he was cattle, you know.
Right, okay.
So I liked the horses, you know.
Sure.
And so we rode up there, and
you rode up on horseback.
On horseback, bare horseback.
Okay, it's hot. It's August.
Mm-hmm, right.
Right.
And so we rode up over there, and
two little kids. How far out of town did you ride?
Approximately. Miles.
8 miles?
Maybe 5-6 miles.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And then we got as close as we could with the horses. And there's a lot of rocks, so Jose suggested that we tie the horses, take their bridles off, so they could, you know, eat some of the grass that was there.
They wouldn't run off.
Yeah, basically. Okay. So we'd have something to ride home.
Oh yeah, good idea.
Long ways, you know.
Yeah. All right. Now, how did you know to stop right there? How did you know that the cow that was about to calf was in the neighborhood? You just guessed.
We didn't. We were looking for places that had a lot of brush.
Okay. You know. Cows like to go in there. All right.
Yeah, and that's where they usually go, and mm-hmm. so we could see. And Jose had, you know, had binoculars, so he could scout around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we went in and we started going through, looking for it, and we finally heard it. It moaned.
You heard the cow. Interesting.
Moaned, yeah. And so then we went up to where it was, and we found it, a brand new calf. It was a white face, and it had given birth to it.
Jose, what was the terrain like there? Give me a little description.
The terrain was pretty rugged. A lot of rocks we had to climb.
Mm-hmm.
Because horses couldn't make it up there. And just mountainous area, you know, a lot of... splinters, you know, cactuses.
Rolling ridges kind of thing with covered with rocks? Not right. Not flat desert at all, then?
No, this was actually where the Apache Indian roam around there.
Mm-hmm.
There were places where they build hideouts out of rocks, you know.
Uh-huh.
This goes back in the old days.
Sure.
And... that was about it. You know.
Okay, so you found the cow and her calf.
Yes, we did. And then as we were sitting there waiting for a while, a rainstorm it just hit, and we went under some rocks, you know, to cover it up, you know, and some lightning started coming down. And all of a sudden, we seen a streak of light over the ridge. As got up from there, we started walking up towards it.
Okay, the ridge is above you.
Above
and
us.
You saw a streak of light. Now, this didn't look like a bolt of lightning. It looked like something else?
No, this is completely a different a scene.
What did it? Did you see it also, Remy?
Yeah, I saw the. You know, but then of course I, you know, I didn't distinguish it one way or the other. I had, you know, I mean, a streak of light, and I assumed it was bolt lightning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, such.
Okay, but it looked like a straight line, did it, Jose?
No, not like a straight line. Just like a lightning, like illuminate. Quite a bit of the section there. Since it was raining, it was a little dark when it gets cloudy.
Yeah, this is summertime thunderstorms that move over the desert occasionally, and it does get dark. So you saw that. Now, did you see it actually as a line of light or just a light area in the sky of brightness?
A light area.
Okay, so you saw kind of like a flash of light, was it maybe?
A flash of light.
Okay, all right. We have to stop right there. Come right back with Jose and Remy as we move into this story. A world exclusive for you here tonight. Another UFO crash with bodies. And we have with us the first two people on the scene, then age 9 and 7. Be right back. Back talking with Jose Padilla and Remy Baca about an event that occurred in August 1945. Very important event. Okay, we are up there under the rocks taking shelter from the August rainstorm, some lightning, thunder, a flash of light, a streak of light. appears at the ridge above where you both are. What happens next, Remy?
Well, after that, Jose suggested that we go out there and take a look, and we did. We walked up and over.
And up and over the top. About how high up from you was the top of the ridge? 50 feet, 100 feet? More?
Probably around 50.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you got up there, you had a good view of the surrounding terrain. Was it a nice...
Downhill.
Okay, downhill on the other side. All right.
And we got over there, and the first thing we saw, of course, was some of the brush appeared to have been on fire. That's that creosote. It's oily, you know. They
right.
used to call it greasewood at that time.
Was there smoke?
A little bit of smoke coming out of there.
Okay.
But mostly dust.
How far from the top of the ridge down the other side, approximately?
Oh, probably maybe 100 yards or so.
Okay.
To the edge of the site.
Okay. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but you looked down there and you saw a little bit of smoke, but a lot of dust.
A lot of dust up in the air.
Okay. All right. And this is still raining, is it, Jose?
No, it just quit raining.
Okay.
The steam of that ground, you know, was just coming up.
Because the ground is hot and the water on it, and a little bit of steam. All right. Okay. Vapors, whatever. Okay, Remy, go ahead.
So it's we start walking downhill, and the ground's hot. It's warm. It's warm from the weather, and I guess from the humidity, the rain, as such. And the first thing we saw is this. It's kind of like a great giant size in today's words, because at that time there wasn't any, but a road grader goes in with about a 100-foot wide blade.
Got it.
You know, and just tears that apart.
Scrapes all the vegetation right off?
Oh, yeah. It scrapes rocks and everything. Probably a couple of foot deep. That's the first thing we saw, and then as we went through the...
Oh, hold on now. This is a big gouge. It's a straight line gouge?
Well, not exactly straight,
mm-hmm.
but it's about probably 100 probably 100 yards long.
Okay, how wide?
Probably between 75, 100 foot.
That's a wide gouge.
Yeah.
100-foot, 75-foot wide, 100 yards long. Jose, do you remember it as being that big?
Yes, it was.
Okay. All right. So, and what are you saying to yourselves at this time? What the heck is this?
Well, it was kind of scary, but we proceeded to get to check and see what it was.
Sure.
And...
And this, again, is about a foot deep, you estimate, in through the sand? And
it would have been about deeper than a foot.
It really plowed up the ground then?
Yes. And it was a good football field long.
Okay. All right. And you knew, obviously, that it ended, and you turned and began to walk, I guess, on this gouge toward the end?
Yes, we did. We didn't get too close to it, but it's we got close down to where that an old road used to cross.
Okay, so the gouge crossed an old dirt road track of some kind.
Yes, it did.
Okay.
So I got my binoculars out and was looking out through it. I could see where it dead-ended right underneath a little ridge there.
Okay, the gouge ran into a ridge and stopped.
And stopped, yes. It kind of made a like a right turn.
Before it stopped.
Because that the gouge wasn't a straight shot.
Okay. No vegetation left on the ground at all. It was stripped.
It was stripped. Just like if a caterpillar or something gone through there.
And let's say it's 100 yards long and there's a slight right turn toward the end, and then it runs into the rocky ridge and stops. How much of that 100 yards would be that last little leg where it made a little shift, approximately? Just in your mind's eye.
It'd be about 100 feet.
Okay. All right. So maybe a third the length of the total gouge was that last leg where it turned to the right?
Just about, yes.
Okay. All right. Do you remember it that way as well, Remy?
Absolutely. It dug itself into the sandy soil there.
Mm-hmm.
It dug itself into it.
At what point, Remy, did you and Jose see something there? And did it take the binoculars to see it, or could you see it pretty well without binoculars?
Well, we could see that there was something there, but we couldn't quite make it out because of the dust.
Still dust.
And the heat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so essentially, what we did is we went back up on top of the ridge.
Retraced your steps back
cool
up?
Off, mm-hmm. You know, cool off and rethink. And about that time, I pretty well had had enough, you know. I'd seen more than I wanted to see.
Okay.
This was really scary. You know?
All right.
And I want to go home.
Okay.
Jose said, now let's plow on, you know.
Well, all right. Hold on. We have to pause here just for a minute. I can understand that. You're 7 years old. This strange gouge in the desert, 100 yards long about. Something in it that turned right and then slammed into this ridge and buried itself partially. For all of you who are online, please go to the guest box at rents.com and click on the link there that my webmaster James has put up there under Jose and Remy's names, and you'll see a clay model replica that they have been kind enough to provide exclusively for the program tonight to give you an idea of what it was that they ultimately saw. We'll get a description of that as we continue in a minute or two. Remy and Jose. Okay, Remy, I understand. 7 years old. This is, I don't know if you guys went to the movies back then, if you know, whatever. But this is before the flying saucer age, of course. This is before the term was even coined. But there were certainly memories of War of the Worlds, which had happened not too many years before. Before you were born, though, Remy, maybe Jose was just born at that, was 1938, 39, something.
The closest movie theater from San Antonio was about 11 miles.
Okay.
Yeah, so
all right. That had the hand crank projector, did it?
Probably. I didn't go to a movie until I was older.
Well, you guys invented the prototype for the cell phone, so that's okay. Don't worry about it. Look where you are now. All right.
Right.
Let's go back there now. You go back up on the ridge. You retrace your steps to a degree. You're sitting up there. You're looking down. There's still dust in the air. It must have been a heck of a lot of dust, huh?
There was a lot of dust, yeah.
All right. And Remy says, I want to go home. And Jose says,
Let's go on. Let's keep going.
Jose,
let's go take a look.
What did you tell him?
Well, I'm the always been the type of guy, you know, that if I see danger ahead, you know, and I have to go through, I'll stand up to it.
Okay.
So I told him, you know, let's go ahead and check it out.
Okay. And Remy said, go ahead, I'll be right behind you.
Yeah.
That's right. Absolutely.
All right. So what did you do next, Jose?
Well, I got my binoculars out. And was looking through it, And as I seen, you know, some of the dust that just settling down, there was some things moving in there.
You saw movement?
Movements in there.
Okay. Did you think at the time maybe an airplane had crashed?
No, at the time, you know, that I was thinking about that A-bomb, another A-bomb they were testing.
Oh, my. So you thought that maybe they had something to do with the atomic bomb? You certain when that blast went off, you all knew it.
Oh, yes.
And you thought this, we think it could have been another bomb or something?
Yeah. That's what I thought, you know.
Oh, my. All right.
And Jose had good reason to think that because we used to call him the little atomic man. He was close, much closer to ground zero than I was.
Uh-huh.
And him and his mom, his family were. His mom went blind, I think, on one eye due to the exposure.
They didn't warn everyone to look away?
What? No, we didn't know that was even taking place.
I understand. And yet it was close enough to have damaged your mom's eyesight.
Well, not only my mom's eyesight, you know, all the cattle that we had on the ranch there, and also the ranchers in there, they come out afterwards with they call it a pink eye.
Yeah.
And come to find out, you know, that wasn't the problem, you know. It was just that...
They were burned.
Burned.
Were they blind?
Yes, they were. We had to kill a lot of them, cattle in there, that had cancer.
Well, did you see the mushroom cloud?
Oh, yes, I experienced that.
You must have thought it was some force from hell or something.
Well, at first, you know, I thought there was a car coming, you know, but my mom said, you know, it can be a car, you know. Then I said, well, maybe the sun come out, you know, and it was about 200 times, you know, brighter than the sun, you know.
What time of day was the Trinity blast or night?
5:26.
A.A. In the morning?
In the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It was still dark. And all of a sudden, you know, the sun doesn't come out that bright.
Yeah. Wow.
When we went outside, and it was only me, my mom and I, you know, that...
Mm-hmm.
And I ran inside the house, back in the house. She stood up through the crack of the door,
mm-hmm.
Jim. She was looking at with one eye, and that's the eye that became blind on her.
Well, about how far from your house was the blast, do you remember?
About 20 miles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, let's go back up to the ridge so that nightmare is still with you. But you obviously are a very brave young man, and let's give Remy credit, too. He didn't cut and run. He stayed right there. All right, so the dust is starting to settle. You see some movement at the end of this gouge that stops in the little ridge.
Right.
All right. Go ahead, Jose.
Okay. And we start approaching it, and we got kind of goosebumps.
How close did you get to it at that
Probably
time?
Probably about... 200 feet.
You walk down. The brush is, how tall is mesquite? A couple of feet?
Well, a couple of feet, you know, but we were short guys too, you know what I mean?
Yeah, young kids. Okay. All right, so you move down toward it. Dust is settling.
When I started seeing those, I could say, you know, little people walking, you know, moving around inside.
You could see them upright walking around.
Yes. They looked like they were excited, you know, desperate or something.
Moving quickly?
Yes.
Were they colored in any uniform, or what did they look like?
Like a rustic gray-white or overalls.
Was it tight-fitting or loose-fitting? What could you tell?
I couldn't see too good in it, but I noticed that... That overalls looked like they had a hood on,
mm-hmm.
or maybe they didn't have no hair.
Okay. So it was kind of a grayish white.
Yeah, grayish white.
Okay. Were they all about the same color, one solid gray-white color?
Yes.
Okay. And were you looking through your binoculars at this time, or could you see them with the naked eye?
No, with the binoculars.
Okay. When you looked at them, were you able to count them? How many did you see?
There were about three.
Okay. Were they climbing in and out of anything, or were they just walking around?
No, they were
around?
Just moving around. Like if, for example, sometimes if someone hit themselves, you know, and they're out of balance.
Staggering around?
Staggering, yes.
Oh. Did you let Remy look through the binoculars?
He didn't want to look. He was a little bit scared, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So I just decided, you know, that we should return back to the range. Because he was getting the sun was going down, you know, getting a little dark.
Did you tell him what you saw?
Yes, I did.
How did you remember, Remy, what he said to you?
Right. He was describing them, and I had my hands, I remember, over my face, and I would look through the fingers, look at these things. And what I would see was they move, you know, they move like a flash when they moved.
You mean really fast?
They are rapid, yeah, like a flash. They're here, and then they're over there. That's what I saw.
Okay, you're a couple hundred feet away.
Right.
Now, Jose's got the binoculars.
He's got binoculars. He's seeing
much closer than you are.
Oh, absolutely.
But you could definitely see individual humanoid-looking shapes.
And not only that, but one of the things that really, I think, that really brought things to, you know, to a peak was the sounds that came out of there. I don't know whether you've ever hunted jackrabbits, but when you hunt jackrabbits and you shoot one, it gives a sound, a real high-pitched sound, like a baby crying.
Okay.
And when I heard that, boy, I tell you, you know.
So it sounded.
I knew somebody was in pain in there.
And was this sound being repeated over and over again, or was it a continual noise?
It would come on, you know, come on and off. You could hear that.
But it sounded like someone was in pain, someone was in
right.
distress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was clearly heard by you as well, Jose?
Yes, I did.
What are you thinking at that point?
Well, I was thinking about this. Someone's hurt. Should we go in there and help? And then at the same time, you know, I kind of backed up too, you know. You could have been dangerous.
Do you think at that point you sensed, or do you remember sensing that these might not be regular little kids or regular people? They might be something different?
You know, I couldn't say, you know, that since I never experienced anything like that
right.
before.
We had nothing to compare with.
I understand.
And we're small town folks, you know.
Well, you couldn't do much more than you did.
That was all we could do.
How much time do you think you spent looking and listening? It's a long time ago, but these things I'm sure are probably as vivid in your mind as they could possibly be at this point. It's something that I would never forget. How much time do you think you observed them? Jose?
Probably about less than 30 minutes.
You had a good look then.
Yeah,
okay.
We were there, you know. I thought, you know, I figured, you know, if it wouldn't have been getting dark.
Yeah.
I think we would have got to it.
And so if it hadn't been so late in the day, you would have gone down.
I would.
Okay, well, it sounds like you would have. All right, stand by. We shall pause for our top of the hour break. A fascinating story for you. First time ever on radio. And I'm very honored to have Jose and Remy here. We will continue our conversation right after this short timeout.